IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Phil.
And I'm Crystal. And this week, we're joined by the wonderfully talented Leo Award-winning production designer who's worked on Netflix's Firefly Lane, Story of a Girl, all the way through to films like Mission Impossible 4, The Predator, Skyscraper, and Smallville.
We are thrilled to have Cheryl Marion join us today. So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Hi, oh, Cheryl.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's a beautiful sunny day and, you know, I'm happy to be here.
That's great. Your video that we recorded for the new Our Work website, it is such a fantastic video. I got to say, we've been showing it to everybody as the demo of, as we demoed ourwork.ca. But in that video, you tell a story about how you actually got to join the film industry, how you moved from the real world to the film world. And can you tell us a little bit about that? Maybe recap it just about that transition.
Oh, sure. You know, my background is interior design, and I was at an interior design meeting, we were all waiting for the president to arrive, and he arrived late. So afterwards, there was a wine and cheese, and I was talking to him. And I said, Alan, you know, what were you doing? How come you were late? And he goes, oh, I got hung up on set because I'm working on a TV show. And I said, what? For me, you know, I always thought that was something that was not really in the realm of what I could do. Like, it just seemed like something so foreign, something that had always, you know, captured my imagination. And watching films, I'd always thought, oh my God, that would be so cool to do that. But I never thought that my skills were applicable to that. So anyway, I quizzed Alan on it, and he told me about IATSE and how to apply to become a permittee and all of that. And so the very next day I did just that. I came down to this office and picked up an application and started that process.
So it's all about wine and cheese, right?
It always
is. That's one of my favorite parts of that story, because it just shows you how important those networking events are, right? In any field, really.
Right.
And in that moment, it seems like a bit of a mentorship started. And I know you've talked to me about mentorship before. Can you go through maybe what your experience with being mentored has been in the film industry?
For sure. You know, I did at that point lean on Alan heavily. I don't know if he still recalls, but I did. And I bugged him for names and contact numbers of art directors and production designers. And this was, you know, emails were a thing, but nobody... There wasn't a list of email addresses, so a lot of it was just cold calling. So he provided me with names and phone numbers, and I would call people up and say, hey, I'm a permittee, I have a portfolio, are you looking for anybody? And even if you're not, how about if we meet and I can show you my portfolio, and maybe, you know, in your next project you'll have a need for someone with my skills. So I did that a lot. Kudos to Brent Thomas, because he was the first one to sort of take me under his wing, and he gave me my first job as an art department assistant.
Oh, do you remember what show that was?
Absolutely. It was called Baby 2000. It was a movie of the week about a bad pharmaceutical company cloning babies.
Oh. I also started on a movie of the week. It was a lot more dark of a topic, but
yeah.
So you mentioned skills. Can you tell us what was your starting skill that kind of got your foot in the door? What was your, you know, what were the skills that transferred from your interior design to art?
Well, I think that, you know, I had all of the basic skills that I needed to do my job. As an art partner assistant, I wasn't, you know, it's really the entry level. So your skills might not get used to the to the point to which you're trained to have them, but it's all part of the process of learning the ropes and learning how to apply those skills to film. But for sure, my abilities to design, a lot of design is problem solving, right? It's about taking the parameters that you have in front of you, whether it's a script or an interior space for a business, having those parameters and then figuring out how to arrange a space so that it works for what it needs to do. So interior design for sure gave me that skill. It was just a matter of adapting it to film, to cameras and wilding walls and how it functions to serve a script and the narrative. And so that skill was helpful, as well as I think the ability to do construction drawings is, I think, invaluable. It's an invaluable skill to the union. I know as I hire people to do that job now, but it was invaluable to me to get my foot up into the art department.
So what are you actually, when you're hiring somebody, what are you looking for specifically? You said the ability to draft technical drawings and that. Is there a wide range of skills? Are you, or for if, let's say you're hiring an art department assistant, is it just, you just look at specifics, or is there, like, is it project related or?
It can be project related, but for an art department assistant, for sure, what I'm looking for is a range or a talent in one particular area. It could be somebody who's, you know, trained as a graphic artist, and that's their specialty. And so, you know, you're not going to be giving them drafting projects, but you know that you will be bringing them up, and hopefully at some point they will be flourishing as a graphic artist in the union. And same with people who do, you know, drafting, construction drawings. It's a, you know, at first you're doing, like I said, this broad range of skills of tasks, not necessarily using the specific skills that you have, but those tasks are sort of focusing you into the job that you will be doing so that you have a broader outlook on what's required for the art department.
And when you were talking earlier, you touched on a subject which is really near and dear to my heart, which is the story. And because it's all story driven, that's what really art is. It's a conversation with an audience. And we had a really interesting guest on a while ago who said in costumes that the story's being told before the actor even says a word, because you open on somebody in a space wearing clothes, and that's all telling the story. Do you really resonate with that as well? And does that inform how you approach everything? Do you go back to the story all the time?
Oh, definitely. Always back to the story and the character who is inhabiting that space, or whatever action is taking place in that space. For sure, every set that's created has to serve the story, serve who the character is, and be able to function for a shooting crew and a camera.
Right. So it's not just logistics. It's always going back to the story to go, okay, well, does this actually work to tell the story?
Yeah, the story is always sort of the guiding light, and the characters, I would say, the story and the characters, because oftentimes we're designing a specific set for a certain character, whether it's their apartment or their workplace or another, you know, place that this character inhabits. And you want that space to be reflective of who that character is. And you kind of have to get into the character's head a bit, right, to do that. How, you know their background. How would they, you know, what kind of furniture would they have? What would their aesthetic be? Are they tidy and clean? Are they, you know, there clutter everywhere? So you have to know the character and who they are in the world before you begin to design a set for them.
And do you have any standout sets that you can think of that you worked on that you just stood back and went, wow, like, that's incredible?
On Firefly Lane, there were a couple. KPOC set was fraught with challenges, and those are the challenges that you never see on camera. Like, you, when you watch the show, you don't see all of the background of all of the tears and blood and sweat that went into creating it. But we were very limited in our budget. And so we were forced to create sets in a little bubble, if you will, so that a group of sets were all within either a cart push or walking distance of each other. And that posed certain problems because, you know, I was handed this big empty office space in the back of the CBC building. And they said, well, here's your KPOC. And KPOC was supposed to be sort of a 1970s trudging softly into the 80s kind of office, like a TV station. And, you know, this big empty, well, it wasn't empty. This big space in CBC was just, it's full of all these desks and lights and all of this stuff that was just there left behind after the cuts they had at CBC. And so, you know, it was a lot of layers of bringing in materials from that era, taking the sort of the 90s look out of the CBC, dealing with the ceiling and the lighting and all of that. And then, you know, when it all was said and done and I stood back and looked at it, I was very happy with how it turned out, given the parameters that we had to create that set. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, sure, the ceiling should have been more interesting, the floor should have been more interesting, but those were not options for change, you know, in that space. So we did what we could with what we had. And although it's not the most glorious set in the world, it came across well, I thought.
For anyone listening right now, we actually have the before and after photos of that very set in your departmental video on artwork.ca. So check that out for sure.
Yeah. Do you remember when you saw something that you designed on screen the first time, the very first thing? Because coming at it from an interior design perspective and then getting into the industry, do you remember that moment where you said, I did that?
I think... Yes, of course, every opportunity I've had to see the work I've done on the screen, I've taken. And I had that particular moment of pride, I guess, when I first saw the Mission Impossible movie that I worked on. And again, this was a transformation that had somebody told me that, you know, this is what we're going to do and this is how it's going to look, I would have shaken my head and go, this is not possible. Because we took basically the street in front of the convention center in January, February, and we made it into a tropical streetscape of Bangalore over the space of, 4 weeks. So, I mean, that involved so many elements of graphics and taxis. And if you look at that streetscape, it's just jam-packed full of taxis with graphics, the streets, the curbs. The entire convention center windows were full of... Indian graphics. We changed the backlit sign over the parkade. We added light fixtures that were that we see in Bangalore, and all of those little touches, just layer upon layer upon layer of things to create that streetscape. And then, I mean, the thing that blew me away was having the entire greens department up in lifts for a week and a half, adding silk leaves to all the trees on front of the streets so that they didn't look like barren trees in the winter, which they were.
And the colors are so vibrant. Mm-hmm. And it's such an incredibly moving scene. And it's just a tiny little piece of that film.
It's a tiny clip.
I thought you were going to go into the Burj Khalifa or whatever. And, you know, and how interesting that was, that set too. But the outside work, I mean, the attention to detail there is phenomenal.
I want to ask you a question, kind of similar a vein, because this is a question I get all the time from people that say, hey, Crystal, like, how do I get in this department, that department? What is the difference between working on television and working on a feature film?
I think that there's a lot for the art department for set design. I think there's a bit of difference in the scale of things. You know, that world is becoming more and more crushed, right? Because we'll work on a Netflix feature, but you know that feature is never going to be shown on the big screen. It's going to be on somebody's TV. And, you know, if you were really honest, you would be calling it a TV movie, but we don't. We still refer them as features. And same with series. We tend to call them TV, but again, they're not necessarily TV because they're being shown on the same platform. It's just a series. So I think maybe in the future that designation will change, that, you know, we won't refer to it as a TV show, as more as a series. But I think that from what I've experienced, feature films tend to have larger budgets. They have more money to spend on sets and the decoration of them and what happens in them. For instance, on Peter Pan and Wendy, which I spent some time art directing, there's this magnitude of what they're doing that you just don't find on a series or on TV. They're putting, you know, they're building a part of a ship. They're putting it on a gimbal. There was even thought of putting the children's bedroom on a gimbal set that could rotate 360 degrees. I mean, these are part of the conversation of, should we do this as a possibility? And on a series, typically those conversations never happen. Like, it's just, no, we're not, you know, even if Peter Pan has to walk on the roof, we are not turning the set upside down.
could you tell us what a gimbal is, just for anyone who might not know?
Sure. A gimbal, putting a set on a gimbal means putting it on some sort of usually a metal structure that has motors that can move that structure back and forth and up and down and around, so that that set can have the movement of, say, having an airplane set or a ship on a gimbal allows you to have that rock and roll of the ship or the movement of an airplane without it ever leaving the ground, really.
Can you tell us the three biggest things that are misunderstood about your job?
I would say that I always get asked, well, you know, what do you do? Like, and, you know, my big sort of grand answer to that is, we create everything that is behind the actors. So the actors are taking up part of the screen, and everything else was created by the art department. And so then people kind of get it. But the misconception is that, you know, we decorated or we put in the furniture or we changed the couch or something. And there's that sort of, there's the misconception of not understanding that we're creating a set that is reflective of the character or advancing the narrative of the story, those sorts of things. So I would say that's one, is not understanding what the art department does. The other one is in that vein also, how many times I've ridden in the shuttle bus where, you know, people are chattering on the way to set in the morning and someone will say, oh, this is such a great location that Locations has picked out. And, you know, no disregard to Locations. They do fantastic work and they find those locations that are filmable. But at the end of the day, that decision is a creative one. Maybe made with the logistics in mind or with an eye to the logistics. But the production designer did have something in the choice of that location.
So you mentioned a print you have of a painting of the late and great Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Right. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, she was a feminist and she fought hard for women's rights. And I have tried to carry that torch as much as I can in any limited way I can. And, you know, I was sitting in one of my favorite pubs a while ago and they had a painting of her up on the wall. And, you know, I'm always trying to not just be a better production designer or film person, but I'm always trying to be a better person, and I want to carry that with me into the work I do and the people that I interact with. So I was looking at this painting and I thought, I have to do more. So Anyway, I took a photo of the painting, I printed it out, and I wrote on the bottom of it, "Do more." As a reminder to me, and I put it across my desk. Nobody ever sees it unless they come right in my office and turn around. But it is a reminder to me that there's always something else you can be doing. There's always something else that we can be doing to, help move that ball up the hill or make a change or make the world a better place. It's not just about being a good film person or designer or whatever it is you do in film. It's also about being a good person in the world.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very good sort of reminder for anyone in film. I mean, that's how you have to be. You have to be self-motivated. You have to be a self-starter. You have to be always pushing your boundaries.
And in a related note, you wrote a really moving personal story about your experience as a Métis person and your history and coming to terms with it. How does that inform the Do More? I mean, we all know that issues of reconciliation, equity, diversity, and inclusion are top of mind right now. But for you, what does that actually mean?
I am a big advocate for reconciliation. I think it's important that everyone participate in it. People think that because they are not Indigenous or because they had nothing to do with it, that it's not up to them to make any change. And I would like to see that change. I would like to have people's attitudes around that change. we are a colonial country. The riches that this country has experienced and the riches that everyone benefits from it were at the expense of an Indigenous people. And so it is, I think it behooves all of us to make sure that they are taken care of, respected, that they are elevated to the same standard of living as everyone else. And I think that we have so much work to do because there has been so much damage done. And my story is a small one in the larger picture of Indigenous people, but I will always want to be an advocate and I will always look for venues to do that. And when I think of Do More, I think specifically of what am I doing to advance the cause of reconciliation today, this week, this month? What have I done? I ask myself that question a lot.
Well, I think we can all ask ourselves that. And really, that's a great motto to actually move forward on. We all need to address it. Absolutely. Moving to a more boring question, I guess. BC is known internationally for having some of the most skilled film and television workers in North America compared to other jurisdictions. Why do you think that our name is so good?
I think it's like a muscle that you exercise, right? We have built an industry from the ground up, and productions have come here and productions have come here and asked us to do things, and they might have been something that nobody's ever done before. At one point, nobody had ever, put a set on a gimbal before. And then people figured out how to do it. And then that knowledge increases and spreads. And as we bring in more and more film people and more films come here, we have this sort of base of knowledge of how to do things that can be complicated or not. So, of course, it becomes attractive because you can get things done here. There's the infrastructure, we have the studios and the equipment, and we have the crews, and we have the know-how.
So we start from a place of yes and figure it out, right? We can do?
Yes, absolutely. And that's so common in film. We do things we've never done before all the time. And yeah, that whole attitude of, yes, I can figure that out, or I'm going to ask, I'm going to find out how to do that for sure. And, I'll say that when I go to hire somebody, this is the most important attitude that they bring. That attitude of, I might not know how to do that, but I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to learn how to do that, or Just that attitude of, I can solve this problem, leave it with me. It is so relieving when you have people who work with you who have that attitude. It is, it makes everyone's life easier.
So we have to start from honesty and be open to challenging themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing wrong in saying, I don't know how to do that. I've never done that before. You know, maybe somebody around you has, or you find the answers, or I think with that honesty, people chip in and help you to solve the problem.
Well, I think you've answered my last question there. Oh. I was going to ask you, what one piece of advice would you give someone looking to get into your department?
Yeah, for sure. That attitude, that can do or will do or I will learn to do attitude is vital. And I would say that have a skill set. It's important to, if you are, I can speak mostly for the art department, but if you want to join the art department as a permittee, have a skill that you're aiming for. Have a skill that's graphics or drafting or something that you can offer and increase your knowledge in and grow so that when you have an opportunity to move up, it's not a big stretch, that you're just sort of flowing from, say, art department assistant into being a draftsperson, and then that flows into being a set designer and assistant art director, that sort of thing.
What has the union meant to you through your career?
Well, being part of the union, for sure, I've worked on non-union shows, and when you're part of the union, I feel you have a safety net to some extent under you. You know that you won't be asked to do or you have a recourse if you're asked to do anything unsafe. The pay is way better on a union show. I have noticed that. and, you know, that's typically partly because when shows decide to be non-union, they are typically lower budget shows. Having somebody have your back and knowing that you have recourse or that you have that sort of safety net is always been important, as well as having a place where you know you can go to for training or help with training or increasing your skills and those sorts of things. There's always been those sorts of things made available. And not just in terms of, I'm a set designer, so I want to take another course in 3D design. Not just those skills, but skills on dealing with difficult people or bullying or that sort of thing, going back to being a better human being skills as well.
And when we actually begin to engage with our members, it's so rewarding to hear that support system that we're working so hard to maintain is actually there for people.
I think we're coming towards the end of this session.
It's been so fantastic just to have a chat with you, Cheryl. I'm really in awe of the work that you've done.
No, thank you.
I think that your projects that you tackle and the way you approach production design is exemplary, and the words of wisdom that you have for people starting out in the industry and I think all of us can do more.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Right? And thank you for supporting our website, rwork.ca, with your words of wisdom there as well.
Oh, my pleasure.
That's a wrap on Apple Box Talks for another episode. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
To check that episode out and to find your fit in the film and TV industry, visit rwork.ca.